sold us out, suddenly.
Yeah, yeah, so possibly Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift, I think, is in the market. Mm. Hope there's no bad blood.
I knew you were trouble when you walked in.
As a plucky draw with Derby is followed up by a limp loss at the MK Dons, we'll ask the question, just how good is this Reading squad? And what should we expect between now and May? Is Brian McDermott moving the team in the right direction, or is he merely treading water until reinforcements arrive? We'll try and answer those key questions, plus get your own thoughts in the mailbag, and in pub chat, we'll look at Reading's nearly men. All of that and much more on the Tyler Sten Podcast, episode 81. Hello and welcome. Thanks very much for joining us this week. And if you're hitting that download button, we very much appreciate it. My name is Dan Wimbush, editor of TylerSend.com. And this week, I'm joined once again by Mr. Handbags Harris. Dave, hello.
Good evening.
And making a triumphant return to the studio
is
Mr. Johnny Williams. Johnny, hello.
Evening. And it is actually now a studio. I'm mightily impressed at this setup.
Yeah, we moved to semi-professional joke of a podcast.
Yeah, we're not quite at the professional ranks yet.
Not being paid, no.
Yeah.
And we are only part-time.
We do get bottles with the water.
I don't know, mine was already opened, I think.
Well, it's still tap water.
Recycling.
Yeah. Recycled from last week.
Exactly. Only the best for my unprofessional co-host. Yeah, Johnny, it's the first time you've been in here for a while. The last two shows that you've been part of have been at a pub and a hotel in Manchester.
Yep, that's how I like doing it, on the road.
Yeah. Serve it up, yep.
We've managed to recruit you there for 2016, got you back on a loan deal, and you're in the studio. So thanks for taking the time to come be with us.
It's okay. I do have better things to do sometimes.
Well, on this occasion, thank you for giving up those much more popular activities to come and be with us today. Right, as I said, plenty to come on this week's show. Just very quickly, thank you very much to all of those who have taken part in our crowdfunding campaign, especially to those of you who have stumped up a little bit of extra money to get involved with things like mugs and to pick a pub chat topic, of which our pub chat topic today does come from one of our kind donatees. So thank you very much to Derek. We'll come on to that later. In the meantime, two results that back on, as I said, that draw with Derby and the defeat at the MK Dons.
View from the Tarhurst end.
Recapping this week's championship action.
So guys, we'd said at the start of the week that Reading would get a point from these two games. You probably wouldn't have been absolutely distraught. Probably would have thought it was a bit of an underwhelming week. But the way they came around to get that point at the iPro against Derby, you know, second place in the league and doing really well, and to then go and lose 1-0 to the MK Dons, a team that had lost 5-0 against Burnley just days before. You've got a really... Certainly I've got a bit of a deflated feeling. Is that how the two of you see it?
Yeah, absolutely. To get a creditable point at Derby, I know we always seem to do well there, but I don't think that anyone went into that match expecting us to do anything of note. And then by all accounts, it was, you know, one of our best performances of the season, coupled with a pretty poor Derby performance. And obviously we saw on Saturday that they're in a bit of free fall at the moment. And then, yeah, going to MK Dons off the back of that, you think the confidence is coming back. We're building a little bit of momentum back into the side, and it's just gone. And it was a shockingly bad performance, really.
It happens all through football, though, doesn't it? It's not just Reading. You get a team that's, you know, is on the back end of an absolute tanking, and they go and win the next game 1-0, despite having less of the game. Where Reading's concerned, I mean, I can't say much for the performance because I didn't listen to it on the radio. I wasn't there. All I can say is what I know. We've spurned chances once again, and yeah, it's extremely disappointing to come away from a team who are inferior to us in terms of quality. And inferior in many, many ways, and not get anything, particularly on the back of such a good performance at Derby.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, we have to talk about more disappointments than positives here. The disappointing thing, again, is two more goals conceded from set pieces, and they've cost us points again. You know, you look at the goal from James Henry at Wolves, it seems to be a theme that's just popping up time and time again. Two goals, as I said, both Derby's goal and the MK Dons, both coming from set pieces. And Dave, is there a real problem? Is there something that you can pinpoint that's letting Reading concede all these set-piece goals?
It's very, very simple. It's tracking your man. You saw the game, the Wolves goal with James Henry. It's just a simple near-post flicked header. Nobody's tracked James Henry. Jason Shackle, you could probably say Cooper is a little bit unlucky. He is not taken out, but he does stumble, does trip. Otherwise, I think he at least puts in a challenge. Again, I can't say much for the goal yesterday. I haven't seen it yet. I simply haven't seen it yet. But if it's anything like the other two goals that I've just described, simple case of tracking the man, and players are failing to do that. Simple as that.
Johnny, is there a lack of leadership again? It's a point you've pointed out time and time again on this show. Do you think, again, it's that leadership aspect of not taking enough responsibility from these set pieces?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the rotating cast we seem to have, especially at centre-back, can't help either. When you've got Cooper and Hector, who seems to have disappeared completely from the squads at the moment, and McShane and Ferdinand. You know, it can be difficult, not only in game situations, but at those set pieces, when you've got someone trying to organise, and maybe no one's taking responsibility of that at the moment. I mean, obviously you work on the set pieces, you know who your man is, but, you know, it can be a little bit shaky at times at the back when you don't have that settledness in the back four and the leader, if you like.
Yeah, I don't think the goalkeeping situation helps either. I don't think either Al Hamsey or Jonathan Bond have been particularly great in organising and being vocal.
They don't command their area
at
all.
No, not at all.
Their communication in both cases is pretty poor. You know, in more than one situation, particularly when it comes to actually coming and claiming crosses, Jonathan Bond stays rooted to his line hell of a lot. You won't see him come out onto a 6-yard line and claim a cross. Al Hamsey is not quite so sticky on his line, but then you get the other scenario with the defender turning on his heels, the ball's going to the keeper, and all too often you'll see a mix-up. It happened. It must have happened. You could count easily on the amount of times on two hands that it's happened this season, and a couple of times it's cost us.
Yeah, absolutely. And at the other end, again, another couple of games where Reading don't get a goal from a set piece. It's becoming a real problem now. It was quite funny earlier in the season when we were talking about, oh, they've had another 9 corners and haven't scored. We haven't scored a goal from a corner this season. Now, I know they're not the rich. They're a bit of a myth, I think, corners.
Yep.
I think people assume that, oh, well, you know, you've got this free cross in. They're very hard to score from, although Reading's defence would, as we've just said, would argue otherwise. But you don't expect to score 10, 15 goals from corners this season. But for Reading to not have scored any, and in fact, I don't think they scored a single goal in the league from a corner, in at least a headed goal, in 2015. Or was Pogs in full at Fulham?
That was the only one.
So one in a calendar year. And then none so far in, what, 3-4 games in 2016 as well. It's just not good enough.
Agreed.
Yeah. And they just don't seem to attack the ball. There's not enough bodies in the box. There's not enough pressure being put on the keeper. It is really, really frustrating. And you think it's one of those things. It doesn't help that a lot of the deliveries have been awful. I think it's Andrew Taylor took the first one, the MK Dons, yesterday. Sailed straight out for a goal kick. There's too many of them that aren't beating the first man, that are not getting in the right areas. It's just, what more can I say other than it's not good enough?
I think the other issue we have is we're not a particularly tall team at the moment. If you look across the midfield and in the attack, especially when you're playing Vidra rather than Saar, you haven't really got anyone.
So Big Jake.
Big Jake and Hal, perhaps, as well, who's, you know, quite tall. But even Paul McShane as a centre-back is only, I think he's 6 foot or just touching 6 foot. He's not particularly tall for a centre-back. So, you know, that is an issue. I mean, we know that Norwood has got very good set-piece delivery. I mean, he's shown that on many occasions this season, but it tends to be when he's aiming for goal rather than trying to set someone else up for one.
Speaking of efforts in general, then, this was a point pointed out to us by our friend Rob over at the Two Unfortunates. An article from the Experimental 361. They do a lot of good statistical analysis of the Championship, and they do a lot of good graphical breakdowns of teams' dominance, where they're doing well and not badly. You'll have to go and check it out. I'll retweet it shortly and you should be able to see it on our timeline. But basically, it points out that Reading have got one of the most dominant attacks in the Championship. They are up there with Hull in terms of shots per game. Likewise, they've got one of the tightest defences, so they're conceding amongst the fewest chances in the Championship. Now, you would think all of that would add up to Reading being in the top two. But as we all know, we are not there. And that is basically because the chances we're creating aren't good. And those good ones we are, we're not finishing as much as we need to. And likewise, the chances we're giving away are clear-cut ones, or we're committing our own errors and gifting goals, as we've seen. You know, we all know the goalkeeping howlers we've seen earlier in the season. So that's why, and this whole week summed it up, really. Reading in two games, 28 shots, only 9 went on target, and only 1 goes in the net. At the other end, we only concede 19, so 9 fewer. Only 6 of those are on target, but 2 of them end up in the net. So, again, I don't even know if there's really much to argue about this, but, Johnny, for me, the quality of chances that Reading are creating still aren't good enough.
It's a hard point to argue, but I'll try. I think we are creating good enough chances. It's just the players don't have the confidence, or in some cases the ability, to put them in the back of the net. I mean, I was looking back at the QPR game today that we lost 1-0, Steve Clark's last game in charge, and we actually had a lot of very good chances to put the ball in the back of the net on that day.
Yeah.
I think we are creating a lot of chances, but whether it's a confidence thing, whether it's just one of those things that for some reason the ball just doesn't want to go in the net, I do think we are creating enough. And especially when you look at someone like Danny Williams, who seems to be more and more getting himself forward into the box. I think Brian McDermott has now come in and sort of said to him, you know, I mean, everyone's going to hark back to Steve Sidwell, but you're that type of player now. Get yourself in the box, get yourself in a position where you can affect the game. Don't just hold back. And yeah, I mean, for whatever reason, it's just not going for us at the moment.
I think you could argue as well that a lot of the really good chances are falling to the wrong people. And I'm looking at, using that QPR example, three of those extremely good chances fell to Michael Hector, and who's, you know, hardly known for his prolific goal-scoring ability. Bristol City, Vidra had three clear chances. He had a header against the bar, against Brentford, didn't he? He had a chance yesterday. Again, as I say, I've not seen any of the games, so I can't really comment on it too much. But apparently, it was
pretty bad. It wasn't quite the sitter that some are pointing out. He gets threaded through by Hector wide on the left, and he needs to shoot across goal, but he goes for the near post. Yeah. And
it has to be said, you know, saying that a lot of the chances have fallen to the wrong people. You know, Danny Williams, Michael Hector, etc. Where Vidra's concerned, it's fallen to the right person. He's just woefully out of form in front of goal at the moment. And the only way you're going to get a player back in form is to play. And the fact is, he's still getting in those positions. And so long as he gets in those positions, if he scores, brilliant.
Yeah.
I would like to say that it's only going to take one goal. Obviously, he scored against Huddersfield and he's missed a couple of sitters since then. But I'm hopeful. You know, if he keeps on playing, then he's still going to get the chances. And he's, more than often than not, he's going to get back of the net.
I know that. And I know it's a luxury to be able to say that, strikers need... But for me, I think Vidra doesn't know where the next chance is coming from. And I think that can play into your mentality, because you're waiting and waiting for the chances, and you think, this might be my only one in the game. Not, we're doing well, we're attacking really well, the crosses are good, the passes are good, I'm going to get three or four chances, I've missed this one, don't worry, another one will come along in a minute. I don't think there's that confidence in the people behind him, and for the others as well. This is what I mean, it's the quality of the chance. I know we're pointing out these one or two a game, but you need a few more, I think. And especially when you're having, you know, on average this week, 14 shots a game, 9 on target. Credit to the goal MK Dons keeper yesterday, by the way. He was man of the match. He did pull off some great saves as well. But Ali Alhabsi was making some equally good stops in the other net, so I'm not going to buy that as an excuse for why Reading lost. But yeah, I'm still not seeing enough one-on-ones, enough really great crosses. The crossing's just not good, and it's to nobody in particular. I'm frustrated. I'm frustrated, Johnny. I'm a frustrated man tonight.
Funny, just going back a couple of seconds, you mentioned a one-on-one. And there was a potential red card yesterday, which could easily would have easily had a bearing on the outcome of the game.
And it was
and we haven't discussed it yet.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone in the stadium, but as soon as the referee didn't go straight over the red card, you knew he was going to bottle it.
Mm.
I suppose you can argue that Vidra obviously didn't have the ball under control. He was running sort of away from goal and he was a long way out, but I think he took the easy option. And it cost us. And okay, we'll come on to Matty Vidra now, because he is the man that dominated the narrative after the game on Saturday, particularly with regards to BBC Radio Berkshire and one Tim Deller in particular. I've made my feelings clear on Twitter. I think that, you know, he spent a large amount of time of his post-match conversation with Brian McDermott talking about Matty Vidra, questioning repeatedly about Matty Vidra's state of mind and his ability and his position in the team. I think it took over too much the narrative personally. Tim's got absolutely entitled to his own opinion, but again, for me, I think it's getting borderline obsessive at this point, and I think he needs to take himself away, five steps away from the situation, and look at the broader situation. Am I on my own there, Johnny?
No, absolutely. But you know, we do seem to have these narratives where one person gets blamed or a particular position gets blamed. You know, remember earlier in the season when, admittedly, the goalkeeping situation still is and was an absolute nightmare, but it was after every single match, it was the goalkeepers, are we going to drop this one? Has he made enough saves? This sort of thing. With Matty Vidra, I think we're still learning about him. I think the players are still learning about him. I think the team doesn't quite you know, as has been pointed out, Troy Deeney saying, you know, this is how you need to play with Matty Vidra. We've not had a striker like that for a very long time, a striker who purely relies on his pace and his very good finisher. We've always tend to be built around these sort of bigger types, if you like, or, you know, the archetypal target man. And I think we're still learning about Matty Vidra, the best ways to supply him, the best ways to get him in those positions to shoot and, you know, where he can find space, etc. So I do think he will come good, hopefully, but by that time he might be heading back to Watford.
Yeah, pretty much that. I think with Della, it's becoming pretty much a one man vendetta. I don't buy into it myself, and there's a reason why I don't listen to BBC Radio Berkshire, and it is one Tim Della. With regards to Vidra, I say I've made my feelings clear on him. There's a lot of pressure placed on his shoulders when people see a £2.5 million loan fee. That's not his fault. Going back to your point earlier, Wim, with regards to his general all-round feelings on his players behind him, with confidence. He doesn't know when his next chance is maybe going to come. It just puts pressure on shoulders. And you know, previously at Watford, he was prolific. But at Watford, they're a team that consistently created chances throughout games. They had players that were in tune with his style of play. They had players, their style of play that suited him. And I don't think we necessarily have that at the moment. I don't necessarily think Brian McDermott's style of play will suit Vidra down to the ground. But at the same time, we're still creating chances. He's still getting in the right areas. And if he keeps doing that, then I certainly think the goals will come.
Yeah, he's not immune to criticism by any means. And I'm not going to say that he's had the type of season that I hoped or I think he's capable of. I think he's going through a down patch. I think the big thing here is who else are you going to play? I think, you know, he still has that quality. And to say, you know, what he said a few games ago, well, he's useless. He's absolutely useless. It's completely wrong. And we called him out on the podcast. I'm not going to turn this into an anti-Tim Della thing because I don't want to do that. I'm going to focus on Matty Vidra. You look at some of the stats I've written down here. He's got a second highest amount of assists. He has only got 2 league goals. Disappointing. Pass success rate's good. It's in the top 8 for the team. His shots per game interest me. He's at 1.3 shots per game at the moment, which for a striker seems very low. That's 6th in the team. Nick Blackburn, in contrast, had 3.7 shots per game on average.
I don't think it would shock anyone to find out that he was top of our most shots
Danny
per game.
Williams has just under 3 shots per game, so nearly 3 times as many as Matty Vidra. Oliver Norwood has 2 shots per game, so again, nearly double. And Orlando Sarr and Hal Robson-Kanu are both ahead of Vidra as well. So again, I know he is missing chances, and they're big ones, but it's not a situation where he's getting 3 or 4 great chances every game and missing them. He had that against Bristol City, yes, but against MK Dons, he had 1, didn't do well with it. Derby, I don't think he had very much to feed on, and we'll see how it goes from there. He needs to play with a recognised striker, and I think, and we'll come on to this point in some of the mailbag, but as you say, the very fact that the system isn't settled, there's a rotating cast of players alongside him, he hasn't got that Troy Deeney figure that week in, week out. He had that partnership. You saw some of the flicks he did at the MK Dons. He was sort of putting them in sort of areas that he thought players would be in, and they just weren't. So it shows to me that players aren't on his wavelength. And when you're constantly rotating, I mean, this week he had Robson-Kanu and McLeary alongside him. The other week he had Sarr. He's played with Pearson. He's played with all sorts of different players. Get a formation and stick to it. And that is exactly why I think Brian McDermott has gone after Jan Kermagan. You look at what he did in a partnership with Callum Wilson for Bournemouth last year. I think he's trying to get a system. It's not just a case of signing Kermagan for what Kermagan can do for himself. It's what he'll get out of Matty Vidra and the rest of the side. And I think that is a gamble worth taking. And we'll come on to that in News Bites in just a second. But any other thoughts from these two games? The only other thing I thought I'd raise is, we did slightly disappointed to see Stephen Quinn drop for 2 games? Or was it just me and my eternal man love for Stephen Quinn?
No, I think, going back to the Vidra point, I think Pearson is one of the players who will get the best out of him. Because I think if anyone is on the same or similar wavelength to Matty Vidra, it's probably Lucas Pearson, because he's got a good vision. He knows how to pick him out. He knows where roughly he's going to be. And so I think that's a sacrifice you're going to have to make. And I think Quinn at the moment in that sort of 4-2-3-1, if you want to call it that, probably looks a little bit lost. Like I was saying, I think you need Hal Robson-Kanu in there because you need some presence up front, especially at goal kicks. You know, okay, you can criticise him all you like, but he does win a few headers. And I don't think Quinn, you know, quite has enough to be in any of those positions, or is better than the people who are in the team ahead of him.
I think if we can go off on a little bit of a tangent here, you mentioned Hal Robson-Kanu there and whoever else is there supporting the attack. We've been talking and putting a lot of emphasis on Mate Vidra, mainly because he is the main focal point to the attack. But you've got to look at the other sides, you know, either side, particularly on the in the two wide players of the midfield three. Now, they're generally there to either create or assist. So if the ball's on the left-hand side, then you're going to have the right-hand side is going to be pushing up to create that, to assist that that forward line. And I don't think there's anywhere near enough support coming from that particular from those two positions.
And a call, I think it was a caller, or it might have been AD Williams himself who made this point. He was talking, Hal Robson-Kanu has scored, what, one league goal?
Mm.
How many has Gareth McCleary got this season? Two, three?
Has McCleary scored?
He scored two in the league and one in the cup.
Yeah,
the league
he got one at Portsmouth, one at Bristol City, yep. And I'm trying to think where his other, Brentford. So it's not just Vidra. And this is what annoyed me, I think, a little bit about Tim's line of questioning. I just think it took... there was just not enough questioning about the rest of the team. And it's a team game. It's not just focused on one player, no matter what his price tag is. But anyway, let's move on. We'll go on to News Bites. I said we've got a little bit of transfer news to talk about, but just before we move on, a couple of tweets about the game from Notorious. He said, sigh, just sigh. Another dreadful game away from home. Al-Habsi has improved loads, just need to sort out the strikers. And DJ asked a question, do you think yesterday's game was the worst of the season so far? Dave, obviously you weren't there. Johnny, from what you've seen, worst game of the season?
It's got to be up there, hasn't it? Just in terms of the disappointment as well, I think.
It's one of the worst results for me, but not the worst performance.
I
think they still created a few decent chances. The defence weren't all over the place, but against a team of the quality of the MK Dons, you've got to do better. So it's understandable why some people are saying it's the worst game of the season. I understand with that. I don't agree with it, but yeah. So as I said, losing 1-0 away to a relegation struggler who's just been beaten 5-0 at home a few days before doesn't ring particularly well. And yeah, credit to Ali Al-Habsi as well. As I said, he made some very good saves. Again, you question about his command, and there were still a couple of shaky moments for me, but his shot-stopping, as it has been throughout most of his career, was top-notch, and you can see why he was a Premier League goalkeeper for several years. So, fingers crossed he improves. But as I said, let's move on now to News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
As we mentioned, Reading have been linked with Jan Kermagat, the Bournemouth striker. He's obviously slightly surplus to requirements now at the club, given that they are spending money left, right and centre. They brought in Lewis Graben and one Benikofobe, who I noticed scored at the weekend. Although Kermagat did play, he came on as a very last-minute substitute. Although, Dave, I can't help but wonder if that was a bit of a come-on for the last few seconds of injury time to wave goodbye to the fans.
Possibly, probably. But, you know, I didn't really pay too much attention to that. I'm just pleased that we're actually being linked with players at the moment, and there seems to be substance to them.
Does the age bother you? Obviously, no. A 34-year-old striker.
No, get a couple of good years out of him. Hopefully, he'll get. We're not going up this season. Let's face it. If we get, you know, 18-month or 2.5-year contract, hopefully he'll be able to offer something up front.
Johnny? As long as he's got a better hip than Jason Roberts.
Well, if he has the same impact that Jason Roberts did in his first half season, I think we'll all be happy.
Yeah,
as I mentioned in the previous segment, very happy with it. I think he's a player that gets the best out of the players around him.
Yeah, he's a good quality player as well at the Championship level. He's been at Leicester, Bournemouth, Charlton, and he's scored goals wherever he's been. No reason to think that he couldn't do that here. But hey, this is Reading.
Exactly. And the other substantial transfer rumour of the past weekend has been George Evans, a 21-year-old midfielder from Manchester City who spent most of the year on loan at Walsall. Scored 4 goals in 16 games. He just had his loan extended, but Manchester City have recalled him. Charles Watts, Tarlhurst Podcast Extra co-host, reporting that the clubs have been in negotiations and this one looks likely. Johnny, is midfield an area that we really need to be looking at?
I don't think so. I don't think so at all. I mean, it's I think there are places in the squad that need far more sorting out. I think you've got a hell of a lot of depth at central midfield, and I was very confused by this rumour almost. I just didn't quite understand it, and no.
Dave?
Out of the blue, isn't it? I have to totally admit that I know absolutely nothing about this guy, apart from what I've got written in front of me, the one sentence.
Don't pull the cover back on my extensive notes.
Totally out of the blue. Midfield, what is he? How old is he?
21.
He's
come through City's ranks. He was the first player to represent them at every youth level and then go into
play. Oh, he's that chap, is he?
Yeah,
okay.
He is.
Okay, I know a little bit more about him now. I didn't know his name, put two and two together. midfield. Yeah, do we need him? Do we really need him? Not really. I'm quite happy having Tishbola, Norwood, Williams, and sort of those three sort of players being the main fulcrum of the team. Having said that, does beg the question: when's Danny Williams' contract up?
I don't think it's this summer. I think it's next summer,
and it's a big one.
He is on a lot.
It's
of money.
A Zingarevic contract, so could we be looking at a potential replacement and a younger player to help sort of start building a team around? Not start building a team around. We're obviously building a team around certain other players in the side, but to embed into this particular team. I don't know. It's a strange one. Totally out of the blue. I'm saying, just plucking possible reasons out of the air. McDermott likes a young player, doesn't he? He likes a young and hungry player. He's from the Steve Coppell era. And you know, if he does arrive and come, well, we'll see where it goes and if he adds anything different.
Yeah, and you look at the success rate of another couple of young Premier League midfielders that we signed when they were at a similar age, James Harper and Steve Sidwell, and look at the careers they went on to have. So I don't mind injecting a bit of youth in there. Alex Everson, Reading fan man, wrote a decent piece, a very good piece, I thought, looking at Danny Williams' role within the team and within the midfield and asking if he gives that right balance. I wouldn't mind a good goal-scoring midfielder to come in and someone, as you mentioned earlier, Johnny, in that Sidwell role. Again, I've not seen enough of him to commit. We're going to we'll be speaking to our friends over at our fellow SB Nation Manchester City site over the next few days to get a bit more about him, especially if the deal does come off. But we've all been crying out and saying that Reading needs to get back to signing these young, hungry players that have got a point to prove. And this guy, George Evans, would seem to fit the bill. Wow, there you go. I'll take that as universal approval.
Stunned silence.
There were a few other transfer rumours knocking around, including one Mr. Steve Sidwell, but we covered most of those on the Tyler Sen Podcast Extra back on Friday. So go and download and listen to that. Myself and Charles spent a good chunk of time talking about transfers and contracts, things like that. So I'd encourage you to check that out for the latest rumours. And obviously stay tuned to the TylerSen.com where we're regularly keeping you up to date with all of the speculation and news. In the meantime, though, let's move on to Pub Chat.
The Tylehurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetylehurstend.com.
Right, welcome back to Pub Chat. Again, a big thank you to all of those who have contributed to our crowdfunding campaign. One of those is Derek. And for the amount of money he put forward, he won the right to name a Pub Chat topic. And his topic is basically revolving around Reading players that have been through the club that you had really high hopes for, but didn't quite make it, and it all sort of went wrong. So those players that you thought, this guy's going to be the next Kevin Doyle, the next Shane Long, and ended up turning into Matthew Monse or Carl Shepherd.
Dave Mooney.
So those type of players. So, you know, names off the top of your head. For me, Greg Halford is one. Came with a massive reputation, albeit mostly amongst the Football Manager playing populous. No, it was our record signing at the time. Big name, highly touted, could play a load of different positions, really hyped up. First game, gives away a penalty at Spurs and doesn't really do a lot after that and is sold on to Sunderland shortly afterwards and goes on to have a bit of a journeyman career. So for me, that was one that I thought, this guy's going to be great, and then fell away. Johnny, what names come to mind for you?
Yeah, no, just back to Greg Halford. I think he's sort of had a steady career, really. He's been, at championship level for the last 6 or 7 seasons.
Spent most of the last decade in the championship, yeah.
Yeah, so I think he came with that reputation that he was going to push on and be better than he was, but he still had a decent enough career. The one name that instantly sprung to name for me was Chris Casper, who, well, we only saw him briefly, and obviously we know where it all went wrong for
Friend
him.
Friend of the podcast, Chris Casper.
Indeed. And I thought when he came to the club, he just looked an absolute class apart. He looked like he would be a very, very special player. Admittedly, it was, you know, at a lower level, but he certainly looked like he had an immensely bright future in the game. He looked a class above the team when he was in the side, and you know, unfortunately, it did get ended that fateful day for him. And
yeah, broken leg.
Yeah, and so yeah, I thought he was the one that certainly would have been a sensational player had things gone right for him.
I think, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, Chris Casper, he is he's certainly up there with some of the most cultured defenders we've ever seen. And it helped that he had Tommy Burns with playing his right style of football, and he had him playing in the right position. Casper was an absolutely superlative sweeper when Burns played that. As a member of a back four, not quite so. But absolutely, absolutely right. He's a bit of a shame that he didn't actually fulfil or wasn't allowed to fulfil his potential.
And you can go and listen to Chris Casper's interview from the Tyler Send podcast. If you go, just type in Tyler Send podcast, Chris Casper interview. Easy as that. Any other names, Dave?
Yeah, I've got a few. It has to be said, when I immediately read it, I've gone down the whole youth team product approach. Neville Roach, a name from the past, 1996. Yeah. He scored an absolute hatful at youth and reserve level, was given his chance, scored on his debut against Oldham.
Yeah.
2-0 win. So Quinn and Gooding were relieved of their duties or left on by mutual consent in pre-season. He was never really given the chance under Bullivan. He had a perfectly good goal scoring record, as I say. Never really given the chance under Bullivan.
They brought in Carlos Arba, didn't they?
They brought in Carlos Arba, Lee Hodges, who was also brought in originally as a striker. Martin Williams emergence as a forward player then rather than a wide player that season as well didn't really help. Bullivan, obviously, as we know, he was sacked after a particularly poor run of form, and Burns just didn't fancy him. Ended up going to Southend and bombing from there, really, playing in the local league.
He's still playing for Slough, or he was till recently. Popped up along with a load of other ex-Roars at Slough.
He's about 40 now, isn't he?
I don't know if he's that old. He would have been, what, 21 around 97? Oh, God, yeah. I just realised it's been about 20 years since 97.
Just doing the maths there.
Yeah, you're right.
Other names from the same era, the same youth team. Byron Glasgow, we all know what happened with him.
Yeah, we talked about him last week.
Yeah, and one more recent one, one that I was extremely disappointed and mentioned many a time on the podcast before, Michael Antonio. I just basically don't think he was given enough of a chance by McDermott to justify his place in... within Reading Football Club. It always seemed to be a bit of competition. Mackenough was an absolute shoo-in. There was always going to be competition between Antonio and Robertson Kanu. Robertson Kanu basically seems to have he's obviously won the McDermott race, didn't he? Antonio was sold. I was extremely disappointed to see him sold. I thought he had a hell of a lot about him, and he's showing that at West Ham now. A couple of other names, Paul Brayson.
Yes.
One of the Magnificent Seven arrived again, similar to Neville Roach.
Set records at Newcastle's youth team level.
Bagged an absolute shed load of goals, one goal in 49 appearances at Reading.
People talk about dark days following Reading, and I know I'm not old enough to remember the really dark days of Div 4 and nearly going out of business and stuff, but for me, some of those dark days under the late Tommy Burns, just watching people like Brayson struggle at third tier level.
Keith Scott.
Great Scott. Marek Matijovski is obviously another name I've had really high hopes for. Didn't quite make it. Never clicked. Whether it was players not on his right wavelength or whether Marek was just a bit useless.
His quality was there for all to see. Matijovski. I don't buy into the fact that he was a bit useless. He wasn't useless. He needed an enforcing midfielder alongside him. He would probably be better in a midfield three. To say he's, for those people who think they're useless, just go and watch him again.
A couple of other high profile midfielders as well. Daniel Carrillo thought this guy's going to be class and then was just never fit. And Emers Faye, obviously, Reading's record signing of all time and just contributing nothing. He was signed to replace Steve Sidwell and help the team get relegated.
To be fair, Daniel Carrillo had a bright future and has had a very bright.
He's won the UEFA Cup. Europa League.
The Europa League, yeah.
He can't be a bad player, obviously. Having done that, he's playing in the top half of La Liga.
Well, I think the question is framed as well, is that in terms of that you thought Reading had a really bright future, not necessarily for their career. Obviously, lots of players go on to do well, some not so well after they leave Reading. But yeah, those ones. Any other names?
Scott Goldbourne, I thought came here with a bit of a reputation and never really played for us, I don't think.
He was League One Scorer of the Year, I think, when we signed.
Yeah, came from Bristol City. I think it was probably about $250,000. And for whatever reason, again, he just never really kicked on. Never really had the opportunity at Reading. And I don't know where he is now, but
he's at Wolves, I believe.
Is he at Wolves?
He's at Wolves, yeah.
I don't think he ever really sort of kicked on and developed as much as we thought he would. And
he ended up going down a couple of divisions from us, didn't he? Exeter and then Barnsley and then Wolves.
He worked his way back up.
And he's a good solid fullback for Wolves now. I think he's first choice left back. So he's made his way back up, but with us, yeah, it just didn't quite work.
Yeah, I remember him starting up at Bolton. We got thumped 3-0.
Given a run around, great clearance off the line, 0-0. But yeah, you know, we thumped 3-0.
Absolutely. Well, that's just some of our suggestions. Obviously, if you've got your own rules that didn't quite make it that you had those high hopes for, get in touch with us at the Tarlest End on Twitter, thetarlestend@gmail.com for your emails, and facebook.com/thetarlestend. And we've had lots of feedback into that very mailbag this week, plus a few feedbacks from last week's pub chat topic. And I've forgotten Rules 11. We'll come on to all of that just after this.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.
Right, big thank you to everyone who has got in touch in the mailbag, and especially to those of you who got back to us. You know, we put out last week in pub chat about your obscure Rules 11, the sort of players you thought, oh yeah, they played for Reading. Had a few bits of feedback. One guy by the name of Stacey, said, I can't believe you missed Paul Key as a keeper in your forgotten 11. Thing is, Paul Key didn't play a game, so he didn't qualify.
Boom.
Yeah. Matt Ridley said, other footballers for your Oh Yeah team are Lyndon Jones, Paul Holsgrove, and Sean Evers.
Lyndon Jones was around for ages, though. I mean, he played in the Simod Cup final. I remember seeing him play at least 91, 92. He was still on the books. I know he ended up going to Swansea, so he was around forever and a day. So forgotten, not by necessarily by the people, late 80s, early 90s.
Right, Dave, who does our alternative view, he has said in his obscure 11, he's got Mortone, Andy Gurney, John Polston, Sam Sodgy, Matt Robinson, Michael O'Neill, Northern Ireland manager, Luke Chadwick, Byron Glasgow, Lawson Diath, Michael Branch, Tony Thorpe. Yeah.
And Dath played one game, didn't he?
Yeah.
Steve Maltone, excellent keeper, certainly back
in
the 90s.
I think he did come up in last week's conversation,
Certainly haven't forgotten any of those players.
Tony Thorpe I'd forgotten about.
Didn't he score against Man United in the FA Cup?
Tony Thorpe?
No. Am I imagining
that? For Reading?
Yeah.
No. He was on loan 98-99 of Tommy Burns. He scored one goal from the penalty spot in the last minute against Preston and did nothing else.
I remember Michael Branch playing in a 3-3 draw at Bristol City. It was very entertaining, and that's about my only moment. Did he play in the playoffs as well?
No, because he was injured.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have played in the playoffs anyway because we got promoted that season. It was 2001-02. He made about, three or four appearances. Yeah. Came on for 20 minutes against Bristol City, pulled his hamstring, and that was it.
He's had an awful... It's look up his descent.
He's now in... Is he now serving, or...
I'm not sure. There is prison time in the not too...
he was... Yeah,
either right now or in the not too distant past.
He has definitely been convicted of being a drug dealer.
Yes, you can go have a look at that. It's a very, very sad fall from grace for him. Michael O'Neill, as well, as I mentioned, Northern Ireland manager. I'd forgotten... Obviously, 97-98, he was one of the players that came in.
Yeah, he was
scored against Man City.
Scored against Stoke City. His only goal for us again. Bullivant signing, signed as a winger, played him central midfield. Nice one, Bullivant. Needless to say, looked utterly, woefully out of his depth, and contributed, if my memory serves me rightly, some really, really hideous play in the build up to the two opening goals in the first 10 or 15 minutes against Bolt Vale. At the end of which there was a nice little pitch invasion.
Yeah, John Polston as well. Again, that sort of era, start of 98-99 as well.
Still lives locally, lives in Twyford.
Yeah, Matt Robinson I don't think qualifies for this. I think most people remember Rooster, don't they?
Yeah. Oxford reject.
Johnny, you mentioned before we hit record that you had a few you wanted to bring up.
Yeah, no, Dave took one of mine, Sam Sodgy. I didn't realise he made quite so many appearances as he actually made for us.
What, four?
He made more than that. I was looking him up. I thought he made a fair few more than that.
He was a regular. He was a cup regular.
Premier League.
I might have been looking at four in the league. I know he got four in the league and got sent off twice.
Did he score at Liverpool? Or did he get sent off at Liverpool?
He was sent off at Old Trafford, having come on as a substitute 10 minutes earlier for two. He was sent off for two bookings. He scored, and his only goal for us was in the cup against Burnley.
Okay.
I'm trying to think what the other sent. Oh, the other sending off. I was in the League Cup.
Was that at Liverpool?
Swansea. He played at Liverpool, didn't get sent off.
Okay. I stand correct. Any other names, Johnny?
Alan Bennett.
Yes.
I don't know that he actually played for us.
Did he actually play for us? I don't think he did.
He got capped for the Republic of Ireland while he was with us.
Yeah, he ended up down at Brentford, didn't he? Another £250,000 signing he was. Mm. We gave Cork City a lot of flipping money. I'm surprised they went bust.
To be fair, though, for the money we did give them for Doyle and Long, I think we did all right at those deals. The money we wasted on Mooney and Bennett.
Bit of a thank you to them. Scott Goulburn, I brought him up earlier, but thought he was a decent player. Dan Harding.
Yes, yeah. Steve Coppell, 08-09. Yeah. very good, solid left back he was.
Yeah.
Came with Chris Armstrong when he was injured.
I couldn't really think. Oh, Marcus Williams, another left back. Oh, God. Seemed to have.
Jesus. I felt a bit sorry for Marcus Williams. I didn't think he was horrific in his first, in his brief.
No, it was in his second game. He was given an absolute runaround by League Two Chris Zabrowski at Torquay. Look where they are now.
Yeah.
Second bottom of the conference.
Ian Hart was obviously signed and went on to win a Championship left back of the year 2 years in a row.
Not forgotten, though, is he?
That solved our problem.
No. He was at the game the other week.
Just mentioned it was a point, actually. You bring him up, funny enough. My thoughts have gone full circle here about the whole set piece situation. I think with Ian Hart in the side, we were absolutely blessed to have such a good set piece taker.
Agreed.
And I think a lot of our problem with our set pieces is our delivery. McDermott, he had Blackman taking some of the set pieces. You had Gareth McCleary, who's very much a Mackenough merchant in that, particularly on the left-hand side, he'll float it in right-footed with just a lofted straight ball. There's no whip, there's no curl, there's no real pace on the ball. Anything in an area that the keeper can't come to and defenders find it almost impossible to attack.
We seem to be one of the only teams that do this float it to the back post sort of routine.
It's a hangover from a long time. They always used to knock it back post to Pierce,
try and get Pierce to head it back across. But yeah, I swear. I've never seen an opposition team do that. They just get it in the 6-yard box and see what happens.
Indeed. Well, thank you again for those forgotten royals. I said keep them coming in. We always like to at thetarlesend@gmail.com for your emails and at thetarlesend on Twitter. Right, the mailbag is bulging. Westy would always say, because we've got beat. I've divided this into sections, so I'm just going to read them all through and we can have sort of general thoughts afterwards. So the ones I've sent into McDermott out, although I don't think anybody's actually suggesting McDermott out. I think it's more a case of blaming the manager. Will goes, reappointing McDermott was a sign the owners had given up. That's only my opinion, of course. Matt says, have zero faith in Brian McDermott's tactics and selections. And poor Jake Cooper, the manager seems to think he's the new Barese. Shocking. Brian Davis says, is Brian McDermott Steve Clarke in disguise? Clearly hasn't learned anything. How underwhelming yet again. Nathan St. Paul, we've got a manager who doesn't realise it's not 2010 anymore. Defends the indefensible and a group of players giving 25% each game. DW says, starting to feel the club won't truly involve until Hammond, Howe and Medeski move on. Different owners, same approach. Tom says, I worry that McDermott's legacy affords him too much slack. This team has proven it's capable of playing beautiful football. Stacey says, baffles me how after all seasons and two managers, we still can't defend a corner or deliver a corner. We have a 6'5" defender.
You have one 6'5" defender, and what a team's going to do? And when you're in an attacking corner, they're going to double up on him and stop him getting to the ball. And they're going to end up having, when he's defending a corner, they're going to have their strongest header of a ball. That's what's going
to
happen.
So what do you think, though? Then moving on to the general point, a lot of criticism of McDermott. I don't think anybody's actually saying McDermott out. A lot of criticism, though. I think, Johnny, the honeymoon period seems to be over.
Yeah, and, Tom says, his legacy certainly, had a part of that feel-good factor to it. And I think, that certainly gave him a little bit of time. And he started off his reign okay, but I don't think there's been a performance or a particularly sustained run of form that you think, yes, he's turned it around. I think DW's point about Hammond, Howe and Medeski is quite interesting as well, because I was having a brief think about this earlier and I actually put it out on Twitter. I think, in retrospect, John Medeski got a lot of decisions right. And since he has ceded power at the club to Anton and now seemingly to the Thai owners via Nigel Howe, things seem to be going wrong just about all over the club, not only in terms of the leadership, but in terms of the players we're bringing in and the attitude. So I think not necessarily Medeski moving on, because
he has moved on.
Yeah. Yeah. He's still, he still sits and watches games, but ultimately he's got no power. But over that 15-year period, he just about got every decision right at boardroom level that he could affect the club. And since he's gone and other people have come in with their own ideas, I think that has not killed the club, but it's sending it in a downward spiral.
Yeah. I wouldn't necessarily say that I agree. I think he did absolutely get the vast majority of his decisions right. Is everything going in a downward spiral right now? No, I think we've plateaued. The problem you've got with the ownership structure at the moment, everything has to be agreed by at least three shareholders. And certainly you'd be thinking there'll be a few more advisors hidden in the murky depths. And everything takes so long for a decision to be made. We're going to, you know, some of the other ones. I mean, some of them they're not even worthy of comment. Some of those tweets.
Harsh. Keep the cover in there, guys.
I mean, you're serious.
Me and Johnny love you.
The problem you've got, you know, Brian McDermott's come in. What's he had? 6 or 7 games, and you can see the change that we've had. We're playing at a much, much higher intensity. We're certainly creating more chances than we did in the later stages of Steve Clark's reign, and we were never prolific with Steve Clark in charge at creating chances. We're certainly the intent is to attack. We absolutely attack every single team that we play. That was always a facet of McDermott. But the problem is he's had 6 games, 7 games. And some of those people now are starting to turn and say, you know, oh, he's not up to the job, yada, yada, yada. You know, the guy, Nathan Paul, doesn't realise it's 2010 anymore. No, but if you remember back in 2000 and 2010, Brian McDermott didn't actually get his first league win until the beginning of February.
Yeah.
Just after taking the job.
After given point permanently the job.
We had some shocking performances on the road to that, getting beat by Plymouth.
Yeah, and people were turning around back then and saying, you know, history does lightning strike twice? You know, do you know what? Occasionally, yes, it does. You know, yes, it does. Give the guy a flipping chance. He hasn't got it absolutely right. We know that with the results, with the number of goals that we're scoring. But give the guy a chance. Give the guy some slack. Get behind him on a Saturday. I'm not saying that these guys haven't got behind him, but certainly there's an element of people who are already starting to get a bit fed up of it. But give the guy slack. Certainly. Hopefully we'll bring in a couple of additional players. They'll change the dynamic of the team, hopefully. And I think McDermott will start getting the best out of the players. It took a while for him to start getting, you know... let's not forget that he had to completely change when he took over initially the emphasis and the style of play from Brendan Rodgers. And then he's had his best players sold from under his feet and he's had to completely change the emphasis of play, and he did it 3 times.
Yep.
The guy can do it.
Yep.
It takes him time. Takes him 10 to 15 games each time. But the guy can do it. Cut him some slack. Get behind the team in the meantime. And yeah, just remain positive.
Can't. There we go. Yeah, fair. Sound of applause. Like it. Sturdy defence there, right? And it's not just Brian getting the flack this week. Some people have turned their attention to the players. Dave says, thoughts on the fullbacks?
Not me.
Yeah, thoughts on the fullbacks this season. Is Gunter's time up? Paul says players should be ashamed. Brian McDermott needs to get rid of those who aren't hungry in the summer. Probably most of the squad. Season over.
Can I just quickly cut in, going back to the old fullback? Chris Gunter, is his time up? No, it's not. Is contract due up for renewal this season?
Yeah, we had a piece up on thetarlestend.com this week from
Becker. I actually think, as everybody who listens to this regularly knows, I'm not exactly a Gunter fan. I think actually this season has been his best season so far as a Reading shirt.
Yeah, well, so we had a piece up from Becker looking at his strengths and weaknesses. And the general consensus, I think it was 90% wanted him at least offered a decent deal. I think it was about 50% said you can't bend over backwards for him. 30% said give him whatever it takes to keep him at the club. That's probably a discussion for another day. Probably as we get in towards the second half of the season, we'll certainly look more at those out-of-contract players. Just continuing the thoughts about the players. Sam Ferguson, I think Sarr and Vidger have complementary skills, but make an excellent partnership, but McDermott doesn't fancy Sarr's attitude. And Ollie says, does this team need a psychologist?
Yes.
Orlando Sarr, didn't bring him up in the recap. Probably should have done. Obviously sat on the bench while Simon Cox came on ahead of him. Dave, is his time up at the Badeski?
No. Again, we don't know. I mean, Sam, it's a little bit of conjecture there, isn't it, about his attitude? We don't know. We know that previously he didn't actually start as many games as he should have done. Was it Legia Warsaw we got him from? It's a natural partnership, isn't it, Sarr and Vidra? I think he should be starting. I think he absolutely should be starting. He's a natural goal scorer. Having said that, you know, we do have the AEK Athens.
He has been linked for the loan move there.
And it's a question of, you know, does McDermott see a player that can play in his style of play? I think so. But the thing is, you know, I look at him as a player that needs to be worked with. But what is he, 26, 27? I'm trying to look at it in the same way as McDermott worked with Shane Long when a fans forum in very, very early 2010, when Shane Long started getting goals, McDermott turned around and said, quite plain and simple, what we did with Shane Long, we told him to get in the box more. Before I arrived, or before he arrived, he was in the box 10% of his time in games. He upped that percentage level to 25%, suddenly started scoring. I think the same can be said for Sarr. He does a lot of work outside the box, and he's not there in the box when he should be on the receiving end of crosses or looking for the layoff.
Johnny, do you think a psychologist could help? Is it a mentality thing?
I think it is, yeah, because you look at this team, and I know that we always seem to overestimate our own team and underestimate other teams in the league, but it does strike you as a team that certainly has individuals in it that are capable of certainly being higher than they are in the Championship at the moment. So I think something is certainly wrong, because they've got a lot of talent, but for whatever reason, they're just not putting it on display at the moment. On Chris Gunter, you said it was you think it's his best season. I think it's his worst season at the moment. He seems to have lost any of that attacking impetus, and he's always been quite a timid player, for want of a better phrase, but he tends to now get to the halfway line and either pass it sideways or backwards, whereas before he would be doing constantly these overlapping runs. And
I can understand where you're coming from. I think his one big miss is on that side is Gareth McCleary.
Mm.
He's been playing with Nick Blackman most of the season on that left hand, on that right hand side.
They did not get on well with each other against Bristol City in the last time they played together.
Oh Christ, some of Blackman's passing that day was awful. But yeah, carry on, sorry.
Yeah, no, so I mean, I don't know. I think he's steady, 6 out of 10, but it's tough to say whether his time is up.
I'm looking at him in terms of defence.
Mm-hmm.
First and foremost, he's a right back as a defender's position. They are there to defend first and foremost.
Yeah.
His defending, a general all-round positional play, has improved immeasurably this season, I think, which is where I'm coming from. I look at him as a defender. His attack, not so much. I quite agree with you that he's not bombing up and down the wing as much as you'd hope. As I said, I think McCleary is his big loss. They get on so well, they have an understanding, and they're quite potent. But certainly his defending this season, I think he's a lot better.
Yeah, in terms of a psychologist, and going back to Wally's point, I don't know. You'd have to ask. I'm sure if McDermott thought it could help, he's a fairly modern man, modern football man that's worked in some top clubs. I'm sure if he thought they needed one, they'll get one in. Without knowing the players, it's hard to say.
What's Yuri Geller up to these days?
He's just left Sonning.
Sold his house, hasn't he?
Yeah, so possibly Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift, I think, is in the market.
Mm.
Hope there's no bad blood.
I knew you were trouble when you walked in.
I can't think of any other Taylor song. 22. Anyway.
I literally couldn't. That one passed me by.
Sorry, Dave.
Totally passed me by.
Right, we are fast running out of time.
That's right. We'll shake it off and get on to the next.
No. Well done, Johnny.
That win. That one's also passed me by.
You win this one. Right, we have lots more questions. Harry says, he's angry about the negativity emanating from the Reading fans. Surely we need support now more than ever. I think Handbags covered that very eloquently not so long ago. We also have a question from Alex Everson. He's asking about, you can sell three players in the window and assume all have replacements lined up. Who do you sell and why? I'm going to hold that. That will be our pub chat topic next week. So don't worry, we'll get to you there. Gary Woodward says, Samuel and Fosu need to be put back into the squad, build for next season, and we'll learn nothing otherwise. Sam Richards says, do you think we have 6 loans, 3 out of contract players? Summer is going to be another huge rebuild. Worrying. Is there any point in signing players this season now? Is it over league-wise? And all the decent players will be cup-tied. And Daniel says, is it time to start managing our expectations and accept we are a mid-table championship club? There's also some thoughts from Matt Castle on Nicky Hammond. But again, I'm going to save those for next week as well, because we're running short on time. So just very quickly, wrapping up, as we stand now, we mentioned the Kermagant rumour. And Evans as well. So, gents, the question is the season done? Should we put a fork in it? Or do we need to keep going?
No, it's January. It's January. And McDermott, again, going back to the whole three-season thing, when McDermott has managed to get a team performing, they go on runs of form. I'm not saying that it's going to happen this time around. It may not. The team might not have the character and togetherness. It's a totally different squad of players. At least before, he had a nucleus of players that he knew he could get results from. But no, you can't give up. It's January. And there's still, 20 games to go? 60 points to play for? There's no reason why we can't go on another run and at least push for them. The season's not over at all.
Johnny, what do you reckon? Are you playing players now with an eye for next season, or are you still putting that very best team out on the pitch week in, week out?
You've got to put the best team out on the pitch, because ultimately the fans come to see the best players. I know Gary mentions about Samuel and Fosu and perhaps building for the future, but you want to get the wins now. I mean, you know, you can say all these things about hopefully getting into the playoffs, but we're not safe in relegation.
11 points off the playoffs, and okay. We are 10 points off the relegation zone.
So there you go. We're close.
So further away from playoffs.
But you know, you want to win. I mean, as fans, you want to see wins. Yes, you want to see young players come through and all these, you know, building a team, if you like. And you've got to do that. You can't just suddenly think, okay, in the summer, Brian McDermott is going to get all the players on the training ground and just go, right, you, let's go. You've got to build it over time, like Dave was saying. These are valuable months now for Brian McDermott to come in, get his ideas together, and, you know, hopefully build something, if not for this season, then for next season.
See, I somewhat disagree. I do think you need to play Samuel Nfosu. I don't see too much point in playing Ola John at this stage, and possibly even Lucas Pearson. I give more time to them. I think you need to see if they sink or swim. They might very well ignite your season.
I think there's certainly merit in bringing Samuel and Fozzie back. But what we've got to remember is that Fozzie has had one league appearance at the Championship level. He's gone on loan to Fleetwood. He's been on loan for, 6 weeks, 8 weeks now? And, all right, he's done well then, by all accounts. You know, go on their message board a couple of times and they do like him. He's kind of tailed off a little bit recently. Samuel, he's just coming back from a reasonably lengthy injury layoff. Again, he's not done anything at Championship level yet. The club are doing the right thing, I think, sending him out on loan to League One. Did well at Coventry last season, doing it at, where is he now?
Gillingham,
and he's scoring goals there. There's merit in bringing them back. There's merit in keeping them earning their trade. And then bringing them in next season, seeing what they can do. I certainly think if you do bring them back now and you start playing them, I think you'll see a lot more positivity because fans will see players who are youngsters. To coin a phrase, one of our own. And I think you'll see a little bit more positivity.
Yeah, and obviously Daniel was saying title manager expectations, except we're a mid-table Championship club. Again, if gamble aware, you had to put your money on where we're ending this season. What are you saying now? Johnny?
15th,
wow. Dave?
10th.
Yeah, I'm going to say about 10th as well. I think we'll get close to the playoffs than you think, but I don't think we've got...
We'll be 4 or 5 points.
11 points adrift already is a lot.
I think given history and the way things and the quality they've got in the squad, we'll win slightly more than we'll lose, but we'll still be, you know, reasonably well short of them.
Yeah. I don't think you give up. I said, Kermagant could come in and form a great partnership with Vidra and they can fire us in there. But I think any player you sign, I think you have got to have an eye on beyond this season. I don't think you do a 6 month rental of a loan player, an aging loan player that you've got no chance of signing down the road.
Like Yakubu.
Yeah, something like that. Anyway, thank you very, very much to everyone who has got in touch with Mobex. I said, an absolutely jam-packed Mobex that we couldn't get all the way through. As I said to Alex and Matt, we will answer your questions next week. And to anybody else whose ones I've missed, again, my apologies. I said, understandably, after a disappointing defeat like that, it's a lot of people want to have their say, and we've done our very best, but we could be here all night. And I know Johnny has got a lamb roast dinner to go home to. And no one wanted to deprive Johnny of that, would they? Okay, some might. Okay, we all would.
Dave's having lamb as well, although...
Slightly different form. It's roasted.
Yeah. guess Dave's dinner, win a prize. No, don't. I don't have prizes to give away. Right, anyway, let's move on to any other business. A couple of games to preview, and then we'll be on home.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any other business?
Right, so two games again for Reading this week. They come thick and fast. First of all, it is the FA Cup replay against Huddersfield. We're not going to spend too long talking about this. We've already played Huddersfield twice before. In preview though, so just go and listen to the podcast a couple of weeks ago. You can get our thoughts on Huddersfield. Obviously, the first game ended 2-2. Good chance for Reading to get into the next round. Cheap ticket prices. Can't imagine a bumper crowd. But just very quickly, gents, do you think we'll get through this one?
No.
No?
No. I think the last season was a little bit of blipping form in terms of Reading in cup ties against teams in their own division. We almost always lose them. I don't think we'll do it this time. It's one of those games where I just think, yeah, we'll end up with a 2-1 defeat.
Chance to set up a game against Walsall there if we win, Johnny.
Absolutely. Get a bit of revenge for 2001, perhaps, against them. No, I think we'll come through, and I think it will be good for us at the moment because I think we do need games to get the best out of the players and, you know, to learn the system, if you like. I think we'll name a relatively strong side. I think you might see a few changes, but I think... ultimately, what he'll want to do is keep building those partnerships, keep building the tactics, and get everyone on the right page. And it's a perfect opportunity to do so, really.
Yeah, very much agree. I think you need to keep the likes of Cooper and Ferdinand together. If that is your front three that you want to play with McCleary, Robson, Carnoux and Vidra, then you need to stick with it. And yeah, I think we've got a good chance. I'm going to say we're going to sneak this 2-1. Dave?
2-1 defeat.
2-1 defeat. And Johnny?
2-1 AET.
After extra time. Mm. Oh, I think Charles predicted a penalties win on the podcast extra, so you two both expecting a late night.
Well, I'm not going, so I'll be wrapped up in bed by the time.
Neither am I.
I'm working, starts. So oh, there we go. That's the fickle nature of us as fans.
I sadly have a college course, so it's hardly fickle. I would be there otherwise.
Yeah. Excuses. How dare you try and better yourself?
Well, quite.
As opposed to sitting through a cold night at the Medeski. Right, that doesn't count for the prediction league, but what does is the following game, which is another home game. It's against Sheffield Wednesday at home. Sheffield Wednesday, who sit sixth in the championship at the moment, they're in a great run of form. They've won 5 out of their last 6. And Dave, a team that we played earlier in the season and would have won had it not been for Jonathan Bond dropping one.
Yeah, it's funny. I mentioned earlier Jonathan Bond not coming out to a 6-yard line and claiming crosses, and this is probably the one time he's done it, and he's dropped it straight to the feet of their striker, who's lashed it in the 90th minute. Do you know what? Yeah, difficult game. They're a different kettle of fish than they have been the last few seasons. They're certainly playoff material. They've got a squad that is certainly got some quality in it. Ross Wallace, Barry Bannon, Fernando Forestieri, and their Portuguese chaps are doing all right as well. I see Gary Hooper's in there as well.
I know his loan deal expired. I'm not sure if it's going to be picked up again or if they're going to sign him permanently.
But they've got many different ways of playing. They've got Newhugh, who I see was on the bench in the last game. It was the Leeds game, wasn't it? So they can lump it long if they need to. Difficult game, and I'm really, not looking forward to predicting this one.
Okay, in which case I'll let you go second. I'll let our returning guest Johnny go first. Prediction league wise, our apologies. We all predicted that Reading would either win or draw the MK Dons. You should have known the defeat was coming. So the standings remain as you were, with Charles on top. I'm a point behind. Johnny, you are 3 points behind me and 4 off the lead. Dave, unfortunately, you're propping up the league on 8 points, 3 behind Westy. So, Johnny, with that in mind, what are you going for?
I'll go for a 2-2 draw.
2-2. Dave.
You look at our form against them at home. What, we've won 5 out of 6 against them at
home. Some absolute thumpings as well.
Yeah, 5-0 and 6-0. Do you know what I think? I'll go for a sneaky 2-1 win.
I don't see goals coming in this, so I'm saying 1-0 to Reading.
How sneaky? I think we're talking last 10 minutes. I think we might be behind at half time.
Sending the madhouse mad. DJ Mega Party's version of events there.
Raise the roof.
Yeah.
With the royal roar.
The MK Dons guy wasn't nearly as overbearing. Although I will say, going to the stadium MK, very, very nice stadium, but unfortunately, absolutely soulless. You can't stick 13,000 people in a 30,000 seat stadium and expect. It was just weird. It was so empty. Reading fans were split between the top tier and the corner, and I was in the corner. Just empty seats everywhere, and not like people spread out amongst empty seats. In entire 1,000 seat sections just roped off and tarped off. Just weird, very weird. But you know they're building a club, so what are you going to do? So that just about wraps up the show. As said, again, a massive, massive thank you to those who've helped us out with some pennies. And also, more importantly, to those of you who just got in touch with us and given us your feedback. As I said, we're still working through our new audio setup. So again, thanks. We've had a few people comment and give us some feedback on that. And that's very much appreciated. That's the only way we learn, is if you tell us what we're doing well and badly. To everyone who sent in tweets and whatnot. And as I said, there is lots of decent opinion and, well, very good opinion and analysis up on thetitlesend.com right now. It's more than decent. We offer you more than decent, Johnny.
Yeah, we were nominated for a football blogging award.
Damn right we were.
One of the top 10
established blogs
in the country.
In the world, Johnny.
In the world.
In the
footballing world.
In the footballing world. So, you know, you get that top 10 unprofessional joke of quality.
Footballing universe, surely.
Yeah. Didn't see no blogs from Mars nominated. No. Only Earth-based
blogs.
Or are
we in a multiverse?
Mm. That could be a pub chat topic next week.
I've already got one.
Damn, the existential questions will have to wait. Yes, again, that just about wraps up. Thank you very much to those who have downloaded and listened. I'll hopefully be back with Charles on Friday for the podcast extra. In the meantime, come on you ours.
Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.